I guess usually when I'm using the other concordances over this for word studies, and most of my work, you know, is dealing with the grammatical thing. So if there's any question grammatically, I use the, probably analytical quicker than anything. And then once I see what the grammar is, you know, you have enough knowledge of the Hebrew to kind of settle it from there. But when it comes to etymology of words and that type of thing, then it's a matter of doing word studies, you know, and getting every source. It depends on the nature of it and how difficult it is. How many sources I consult, but I would take advantage of everything you've got when you're doing a real intense word study. But if it's pretty straightforward, you can see the gist of it. I'll tell you what I put the most weight on in doing word studies, even, is if the word is used plenty of times in Scripture, I like to look and see all the places where it's used myself. And then I'll look at what the other guys say. But you know, so many times you run into things where the theology is colored what they say. That not as much in Hebrew as you do in Greek. There's not that many theological axes to grind in the Old Testament as there are in the New. But you do see it sometimes. So that's what I found most reliable. But consult any source that you can. And I'll have to confess I haven't used a lot of the reference works as much as I'd like, just because I feel I'm more inclined to try to do a direct study as much as possible. But it depends on the nature of the thing. If you're dealing with something real controversial and so forth, try to get in, and you're trying to, you know, you're really doing a thorough study on one word and you feel it's necessary, then I would consult everything you can and compare them and, you know, see what they're, how they're lining up and so forth. But one thing about grammar studies like this and knowing Hebrew grammar, you'll find yourself not using a lot of the books that you would have used otherwise. Because you've already got the information, you know, and you're able to look at the, see. Sometimes, what you do is you don't know what the word can mean a lot of different things depending on the context, and you don't know what the context is, so you're kind of relying upon the other guys. But when you've got the Hebrew grammatical background, you know what the context is yourself, and then you can pick immediately which one it has to be. It saves you lots of time. Here's some test papers.
Go and read five or six different sources and what you're finding, and you don't necessarily know which one's which, but they're copying.
Yeah, they copy one another, yeah.
You recall the identical word, and you're going, wait a minute, there's something funny here. And so then what it turns out is you're going back to maybe one guy who really did the research, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody else copies him and throws in their own.
Sure. Now, you find out they're real human beings just like you are, you know, and they're not some creatures from another planet that came down to raise with Hebrew ingrained in their bodies already, you know. It's not that way. It's hard to bring that to somebody who haven't been in it enough and has just got this kind of an awestruck impression of all scholars, you know, that there's some special creatures that you can never really... And they're human beings. Someone who spent a lot of time with it. But a lot of them spend a lot of their time with wrong assumptions, too.
And they don't give any reference whatsoever. They just write it in and it's verbatim from somebody else.
Plagiarism. Yeah, really. Yeah. Or they'll put it in Latin or something so you can't figure out what's going on. That's really frustrating. And it's kind of a snobbery that, you know, well, if you don't know Latin, you don't deserve to know it. Okay, well, let's finish up lesson 44. I did announce the quiz Thursday, didn't I?
Yeah.
Vocab, okay, and then Tuesday, December 4th for the grammar. And I'll give you some more details on that maybe tomorrow on that. We'll review tomorrow, and let's see, the rest of Thursday after the vocab quiz should only take the first few minutes. So tomorrow and Thursday we'll review, and there's not too much to review here. I think we've got Pu'al and Hifil And then a little on the pause, I think there was a thing on pause forms, and there was a little bit on numbers. That's about the size of it. The rest of it was oddball forms. And we won't, on the quiz, basically, for the pool, let's see, what modal verb did they use there? We'll just use that one. And we'll do the same kind of thing. You'll just be responsible for the standard verb on those. Let's see, that'd be chapter 41, I think. Yeah, Gudal. We'll use that one. Chapter 42.
Set up like this one.
Yeah, same kind of setup. So you'll have some forms for the Pu'al of Gudal, and then for the Hifil in chapter 43, you're introduced to that. For the Hifil, be familiar with the five categories of meaning there, and then we'll just take Hishmid as your regular verb for that. And so be familiar with the paradigm for Hishmid in the Hifil. And that should do it. Now there is, I'll have to check and see whether they got any questions on the other, on the numbers and so forth. I'll tell you that tomorrow. There was a little bit of a blurb on numbers. And there was some information about pause, proclusis and retraction of stress, conjunctive doggish. But I'll check on those. Those are relatively minor points. I'm not sure that I'm going to give you questions on that. I'll try to tell you ahead of time. Okay. So tomorrow we'll probably be doing review on most of that as much as need be. I'm not sure how much time it'll really take unless you have a lot of questions. Okay, lesson 44. We are just coming down to the end of this in the exercise. And I think we had covered verse 1 down here. Don't know if we'd gotten two or not. I'm not sure what your indications are. But my marker's right between one and two, so I think we'd finish verse one. And now we're on verse two.
We're on two because it's not marked up in
our paper. Okay. Yeah. Okay, it's still clean. All right. Verse two. John, why don't you take that short?
Okay. Wayoma, Elan, Yawa, Mazet, Vayadeka,
Okay.
And he said to him, Yahweh said to him, what is this, brother?
Yeah.
What is this in your hand? And he said,
that was a vocab word.
This chapter.
Yeah, this chapter.
Yeah. And he said, a rod,
mm-hmm.
staff.
Right, good. That's interesting to see that ma zeh is combined as one word from ma and zeh. Okay. And Yahweh said to him, what is this in your hand? And he said, a rod. Okay, verse 3, Eric.
Yoman, Hashlish, Kehu, Anta, Vayash, Vayash, Kehu, Anta, Vayahi, Lunahash, Vayana, Moshe, Muhammad.
Okay.
And it says, throw it to the ground. And it throws it to the ground and it's not the clay. And no ground on the face of it.
Okay, good. Yeah, and he said throw it to the ground, and he threw it to the ground, and it was a snake or became a snake, because the idiom there for become is hayah with the preposition lamed. So literally it was to a snake, or probably became a snake would be better here. It was to a snake or became a snake. And Moses fled from its face. Okay. Verse 4, Christ.
Why, Yomer, Yahweh, El, Moshe, Shabbat, Yadaka, why, Echoes?
What, Echoes?
Is now Bo, Yisrach Yadol Vayakazet Bo Vayahi Moshe Vaka Ko.
Okay.
Yahweh said to Moses, stretch your hand and take it by the tail. And he reached out his hand and took it, and it turned into a staff, literally in his face.
Okay. Yeah, in his, let's see, turn his...
Before his face.
Let's see. Should be before his palm, the palm of his hand. Remember that cup that... It's really before his, in his palm, his hand. Okay. So when Yahweh said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp by, or literally in its tail, grasp in its tail. And he stretched out his hand and grasped it, and it became a rod in his hand, or in his palm. Okay, was there another question, Peter?
For Shelach and Hissel, is sand a good way to put it?
Yes, I think it's really coming from that. It's coming from, but there is a difference. Let me check on this one. Is this the one? This has got a chet at the end instead of a kaf. Well, there was another one with a kaf. That's right. So the idea is to send out your hand, stretch out your hand.
Oh, Shelach has a chet, not a kaf.
Yes. So, yeah, right. So this isn't the one with kaf.
This is to throw.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now the one to throw has got the it's got the cough.
Is that what this is here usually?
I'm not sure if I'm looking the same place you are. This is the Wayishlach here has got the chet.
Yeah.
And that means to send
vocabulary.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dictionary form.
Oh, okay. Yes, okay. That one's from Shalach with a cough. And that's this is a different one. This means to throw. But I think
that's not the same?
No, it's not the same word. See, it's got a kaf at the end, and the root for this one hishlach down here has got the chet, and that's from the root to send.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Is yours different? Verse 4.
Oh,
right after the number 14 there.
I was in verse 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in the verse 3, that one's got, that's the throw. That's the, see, threw down the
rod. Oh, now it makes more sense.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, those are two easy ones to confuse, because not only do they look almost alike, and then they sound the same. Okay. Yeah, they mean something similar, too. That's why I wondered if there was maybe back there was a variant spelling or something on that one root. Okay, verse 5, Doug. Any other questions on 4 before we go on? Leave it? Okay, verse 5.
Lama'an Ya'anu Hu Ki Nira Eleka Yawa Elohe Avotan Elohe Abraham, Elohe, Elohe, Yayako.
Mm-hmm.
In order that they will believe that Yahweh, the God of his father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the guy in Jacob
appeared
to you.
Okay. Check something here. Yeah, it should be the God of their fathers. Yeah, Avotam, rather than yours. Yeah, I think, it's kind of natural to go yours, but it's so that they might believe that Yahweh, the God of their fathers, and it's plural, their fathers, says Avotham. It's kind of a defective here. The whole mile's gone. But it's definitely the plural form of Avoth. So the God of their fathers has appeared unto you, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Okay. Any other questions? All right. So be it. Let's go to lesson 45 and get started with that at least. We'll, like I said, we'll start reviewing tomorrow. Yeah, this one is almost zero to do. In fact, it's hardly worth another chapter here as far as talking about the epiphials, because this one is pretty regular, or at least it's pretty easy to see what's happening. So hiphil verb stems and inflection continued here with roots one yo, originally one wow. The hiphil verb has the same contraction to holum wow that was found in the niphal. So we've already run into this kind of thing before. But it's one yo verbs that were originally one wow, and so the wow is coming back. And this is one of the forms in which why they claim it was originally one wow. And so the verb yarav that we've had before in the hiphil becomes horiv. And instead of the yod, you get a kolom wow. But other than that, it's real regular. It's one of the nicest regulars formed once you get that change. So it's horeth, and then yoreth for the imperfect, adjusive, yoreth, and then the well consecutive form, yoreth, the imperative, horeth, the infinitive construct, construct horeth, and the participle, moreth. So it's very straightforward. The inflection is perfectly regular. The syllable with kolom wow is unchanged throughout, and the final stem syllable undergoes the changes given in the paradigm of hishmid. So it's just regular. Hishmid was your regular verb. So the endings are just like the hishmid, and the only difference is this kolom wow in the front, and that's unchanged throughout the paradigm. Okay, because the preformative syllable is open with that kolom wow there, the accent on the converted imperfect is regularly retracted with segol for seri. So Wayorev, or excuse me, Wayolev there is pretty typical of what happens on these. Okay, the following verbs combine several inflectional peculiarities. So now we'll get some that are mixed bags here. One yod and three guttural. And still, if you're just combining the irregularities of both. The one yod we've already seen is not too much of a problem. And then the three guttural wasn't all that bad. So we've got hodia there, yodia, yoda, and wayoda, hoda and hodia, modia, to cause to know, from yada again to know, and then it's a three guttural and it's a one yod. So you combine the features of both of those. And here's one, hoshia is a word you should recognize, and it's to save. It's a hifil form here of to save. And from Yasha to save, and here you've got to save in the causative idea here. And Yoshia for the imperfect, Yosha, Wayosha, Hosha, Hoshia, again for your infinitive construct, and Moshia to have the participle. And Yokiach to reprove, Hokiach, Yokiach, Yokach, Wayokach, Hokach, and hokiach and mochiach to reprove. So those are pretty typical. Then one yod and three aleph. The three alephs, of course, get that quiescent aleph. So just a slight difference there. Hotzi here, no quiescent aleph, no pathak fertive there, but the aleph is quiescent. Yotzi, yotze, wayotze, hotze, hotzi, and motzi to bring forth. Okay. Hiphil verb corresponding to the kal halak is holik, as though from a root yalak, as though it's a one hay that acts like a one yod, remember? So a peculiar verb. So that's one that's easy to get tripped up on. Yes?
The verb Hoshia.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about the vowel point for O there. Usually when it's a shin, it gets the same way.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we just have one dot on there. Yeah, I think a kolom wow, it's going to kind of depend on the print, too, but he's making a difference on it. And I think it may be because they're considering kolom wow as a mater, and they want to try to keep that one together. But normally, you're right. You're normally, with a sheen, you're going to see just one dot. But on this one, I think they make an exception, just to keep the integrity of that. Yeah. Really? Yeah, that's part of it, too. It would look rather strange. With this, the cholom wow here, the wow Because it's got both vocalic and consonantal properties, depending on how it's used, that may be having a bearing on it, too, to make sure that you're seeing this as a consonantal one. It would be awful hard to pronounce as a without a vowel point as a vocalic one anyway, but that may be the reason. But you may see variations on this in print, too.
That verb is used in the
call. Which one now?
The one...
Yasha, to save? I am not sure. I found it under a call root.
We didn't have it as a call in the book.
Yeah, we haven't had it in our book yet, no. It's not? Okay. But it's just in parentheses? Okay. It may or may not be used. You better check the lexicon on that and see if it's ever used. Yeah. See, I remember putting it down in notes, you know, from Yasha. But that may just be, you know, the same kind of thing, referring it to the root that doesn't exist, you know, it's not used. So better check and see if it is used.
So in all these, we figure that the
vowel would be equivalent to a yod. Yes, right. Yeah, that vowel is representing the yod, and it's effectively going back to a one yod. In fact, there are some, on the top of the next page, there are some verbs that were originally one yod, and they keep the yod. They don't go to vowel. And they do, okay. That's usually an indication that there is a call form. And try the analytical, see what they've got. Or better yet, a concordance. Just a concordance, just to see if it's actually used that way. Yeah, that's what you got there. That'll look it up under Yasha and then under Hoshea. Yeah. There are here on top page 223, though, a few verbs in there, the few verbs in Hebrew which are from roots originally one yod have the hyphal form heitiv, and notice you've got seri yod there. The yod is appearing to treat well from the root yatav. The seri yod is not reducible, and the inflection is regular throughout. So once you see that, it's just like these others, except it's got seri yod instead of kol amal. But that would be an indication of an original one yod. It doesn't change.
They don't show any call at all. Just nifal.
Okay, that could be then. Just the call is an unused root, and it's all hyphal. And nifal also,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's about maybe 20 nifal.
So that'd be just giving the passive idea.
50 nifal.
Okay, good. Okay, good. That settles that one. Okay, the numbers from 11 to 19, the teens are formed by placing the unit before the word for 10, which has special forms differing from those already learned. The ones we learned, Ether and Asara, the feminine form that goes on masculine nouns, earlier. But here's some different forms. We've got Asar and Esre as the special forms, yeah, for 10.
Required to learn the number 10.
Was it 44? I'm not sure on that.
40.
Yeah, for this next exam, I'm not sure what I'm going to have you do on those. Let me check on it and see for tomorrow, and I'll give you a decision on it tomorrow. That's the only thing I'm not certain about. Okay, I'll have to check and see if what I've already got made up on the test, and I may modify that too. We'll see. Okay. So here, what you're just doing is putting the number, for example, for 11, you just put the number 1 on front of the special form for 10. So we've got Achaz es Asar, and the feminine Achaz es Re. But there's also an optional form here, Ashte Asar, and Ashte es Re, which Ashte would be just a special form. It's nothing like Achaz. 12, you've got Shenem Asar and Shenem Esre for the feminine modifier. And you can also have the construct form there, Shene Asar, so forth. 13 is just Shalosha Asar. 14, Arva'a Asar, so forth. The rest are pretty straightforward, Chamisha Asar, etc. That's pretty much analogous to what English does. If, you know, if you take 10, teen is 10, we've got a, you know, kind of a special form for the word 10, and then we put our other number at 14, you see. It's very analogous. Maybe English did come from Hebrew after all. Okay. I've heard some say that there's similarities, but they've eluded me so far. Okay, as with the tens in section 161a, both singular and plural nouns occur with the numbers from 11 to 19. Nouns frequently itemized, such as ish, shana, yom, nefesh, in the sense of person, you know, the number of souls, how many souls, and so forth, in the ark, etc. And tevet, tribe, I'll get eventually, are usually singular. So they usually will use those forms in the singular and then use the plural number in front of that, and but use the singular noun if it's something that's very common. So you've got Chamisha Asar Ish, 15 men, literally 15 man. But they're, in other words, they're using the singular form for that. It's something that's very common. And 15 persons or 15 souls, you see, would be Chamesh Esarei Nefesh, feminine noun. No, Nefesh is feminine noun, so the form's different. With other nouns, the plural is regularly used. So if it's not one of these nouns that very commonly is using the singular form, the plural would normally be used. Okay. I don't think it's really exhaustive, just frequently itemized. It's probably the most common ones you'll see, but I don't think it's necessarily exhaustive. Yeah, it's possible to see some others. You might see one in a given context. It's, in other words, it kind of depends on the context. If a context has been talking about a certain object and they've been giving the number of them over and over again, then you might see something else used here. Yeah, cattle or maybe, or it just depends on the topic and the subject matter.
What it means by frequently itemized just means that it talks about with a number connected to it.
Yeah, it's talked about with a number connected to it, yeah. Itemized meaning frequently spoken of in as numbers of them. Mm-hmm.
We do that in English too.
Mm-hmm.
You have 15 men, but you have a 15 man.
Sure, right. Making it an adjective or something, yeah.
Yeah, itemized.
Mm-hmm. Okay, vocabulary. A lot of Hifil verbs here. We've got hoshiv, to cause to dwell. Remember, we've had shuv. This is yashav, yeah, to dwell. Yashav, and to cause someone to dwell or settle someone in a place, you can make it in Hifil. This is a real clear causative. Most of these are. Horid from yarav. Remember, yarav already meant to descend, and so here it means to lead down or take down. Holid from Yalav, to beget or engender. You can see the idea here. Yalav is usually used for a woman who's bearing a child. And then Holid is the causative idea, and that would be for the male part, to beget or engender. So if it's a man, he's begetting, and if it's a woman, she's, you know, bringing forth. So this is the causing to bring forth. Hodia, to cause to know or to teach someone or to declare or proclaim. So it can either mean to teach, that's one way to cause someone to know, or to proclaim or declare, depending on the context. If it's to someone, if it's to a person, then you use it, it'll be teach, and if it's something, then it'll be declare or proclaim. Hotsi, to bring out, of course, from yatsa, and a causative idea. Holy, yes, question?
Well, like on that cause to know, just occurred to me, it's kind of off a little bit, but I know we've talked about it before, but the cause to know or teach,
mm-hmm.
in the Greek, it takes a double accusative. Do we have a similar situation here? Do we find verbs like that?
There's a question. This verb apparently is used both ways, to teach someone or to teach something. The question is it used both ways at once? And I don't think it is. In other words, to teach someone something, to use them both of them together, doesn't look like it's used that way. But it's just either used to teach someone or to teach something. And the same verb is used, but you'd have to look at the context and so forth. I can't say that dogmatically. He doesn't really express that here, but probably the case is. Otherwise, we'd have another category in grammar for double accusative type verbs.
Beginning of this, I'll look.
Yeah, if you can find something on it, it'd be interesting.
Because they frequently use Greek type. The accusative, they think it was.
Use the terminology that they use for Greek, yeah. That's often the case because Greek is more highly developed as far as grammatical distinctions and so forth are concerned. Okay. Well, we've got holik, to cause to go, to lead from halach. That's that one hey that thinks it's a one yod. And then hosif, this is an interesting verb, not only interesting in terms of its forms as hifil, but even more so is the fact of the way it's used. It means to do something again or to continue doing something. It's got the idea of continuation or repetition. And there's two constructions. This is the word from which the name Joseph is derived, at least most feel. And Joseph means adding, that kind of an idea. And so it's got the idea of addition or continuation. And there's some interesting idioms. Two constructions are frequent. Hosif latsum, he fasted again, or he continued to fast. And what they've done here is they've taken the perfect form, hifil perfect form of the verb, and then they put the infinitive construct with a preposition lamed after it. So he continued to fast might be the best way to translate that. He continued to fast is pretty straightforward. But then we've got another construction, hosif wayatsam. And this would literally be he continued and fasted, something like that. Because you see, you're starting a series with a perfect form, hifil perfect. You're continuing with converted imperfects, which are going to give you, again, perfect meaning. So you're starting a while consecutive series, in effect. And so it's the idea of he continued and fasted. You know, first he continued, then he fasted. And it's kind of an idiom again. He continued fasting, in other words. He continued and fasted. Sometimes King James almost translates them real literally, and you get this idea across. In the second construction, the verbs are simply coordinated in Hebrew. And of course, coordination is meaning you're joining together with wow. The verb also may have the meaning to add, but the actual translation value depends on the context, so you have to look at it. Sometimes you'll translate it as add. Sometimes you'll have to look at the context and be guided by that in a way to express that in English. Here's a couple of good examples here. Wehospati al yamecha chamesh esre shana, I shall add to your days 15 years. Well, here's just the verb in the hifil perfect form, I shall add. And it's apparently in the part of a narrative, so you're getting an imperfect meaning. So I shall add to your days 15 years. So we're translating an add there. But then, here's another one that's kind of an interesting idiomatic idea here. Hospata chokma el hashmua asher shamati. And it's translated, you are wiser than you are reputed to be. Literally, you have added wisdom to the report I have heard. That's kind of an interesting expression. So, you have added wisdom, chokma, to the report which I have heard. So, of course, I like that translation better than the way that he gives it. You are wiser than you're reputed to be. Of course, that may be more natural for English, but the Hebrew idea is quite expressive. It's really got an expression and a power to it. Then note also the common phrase, exclamatory, asseverative, I guess you'd call it. In other words, a very severe and strong exclamation. And this is often done in an oath. Ko asa... Ya'aseh li Yahweh wako Yosef. May God do thus for me and even more so, if such and such is not true. In other words, this part following, this is a lead-in to making another statement. So it's often a common oath that's made. May God do to me and more. And then notice the more here, and even more so, is Yosef there, and adding it. So may God do this to me and add to that, if such and such. Very common idiom. Okay, then we've got Hoshia, we've seen before, to save or deliver. Hokiach, to reprove or decide. And kinnei, to be jealous, there's a PL form. It's thrown in for good measure. And it can mean to be jealous with F or B if it's a person, or to be zealous with preposition lamed to indicate the object. So if you're zealous of something or jealous, they use the same word. And it just depends on the context and the prepositions you're using. Okay, then nouns. Petzel means idol or image. And the plurals are regular, pasilim. You get a hirik yod there in the plural stem. Ael, meaning God, or God with capitals. So it can be either God in the sense of a false God or the true God, with or without the article. And we've got shao, which is emptiness or vanity. It's kind of an interesting combination. You've got a wow there and then a quiet and aleph that doesn't get any pronunciation at all because there's a schwa. So shao means emptiness or vanity, and la shao, in vain or for nothing. We've got geir, sojourner, resident alien, and shur, head of cattle. It's a singular corresponding to the collective bakar. So if you, bakar is cattle collectively, and shur is one piece of cattle, you know, one head of cattle, as they say. Got the same kind of interesting problem in English. Okay, and mima'al is just an adverb from meaning above, and mitachat is below. And then you'll often see the preposition lamed used with it. Okay. Questions, anyone, on the vocabulary or the grammar on this one? Pretty simple grammar chapter. About what? Oh, well, there's an aleph there that doesn't get pronounced because there's a shawa on the wow. And so you just kind of take the wow as vocalic. Of course, since it's got its own vowel point, and it just be shao, and you don't get any pronunciation of the aleph. We've seen some other things like wayar and so forth that had an aleph on the end, and it didn't get pronounced. Same reason. This is quiescent to the point of non-existence as far as pronunciation. What's that? Oh, okay. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I think we can go ahead and start. Let me just tell you what to do on this exercise, even though we're going to do review tomorrow. In fact, we could maybe even stop here and start reviewing. I don't know. It might be the best thing to do rather than get into this. Well, let's give you the assignment anyway, what you will be doing.
The assignment will be due for?
Not tomorrow. Let's see. The day after tomorrow is the quiz. Boy, this is terrible. No matter how you do it.
And you were going to start reviewing for next
Yeah.
week,
so, I think we probably better do this for tomorrow, just in case we get to. I have a suspicion that we're going to get through the review real quick. It's going to be real short. There's not much to it. So why don't we go ahead and make this for tomorrow and go ahead and do that, and because you got the quiz on Thursday.
After we do this, then we'll do the review.
Yeah. I'm not sure which way that'll go. I'll probably put the priority on this, and maybe I'll give you the assignment now. We'll do review the rest of this hour. And then we'll do this tomorrow, and then with the rest of that hour we'll review. Or I'll make sure we got enough time to review. Maybe I'll even give the priority to the review if we don't finish it. So anyway, just be prepared for this tomorrow. Do part A, number 1, 7, 14. 1, 7, and 14 for part A. And then part C, the whole thing there, the Ten Commandments translation. Okay? So get a chance to look at some different Hebrew here. Okay. Well, let's take some time now to review. This quiz is on chapters 41 to 44. Grammatically, chapter 41 was just more PLs. Don't even need to worry about those as far as this quiz is concerned.
We won't be doing any more forms on the PL.
No, not on this quiz anyway. So you've already been tested on your PL forms before. And these are just the irregular ones. So there won't be anything as far as that. You're welcome to review it, you know, and see what the problems are and so forth. But as far as the test is concerned, they won't be on there. Now, pausal forms, that's kind of an interesting note on things. I don't think you need to worry so much about that either. That's some more of just recognizing it when you see it. And he just talks about here some of these accent signs, the afnak and the isiluk. And then sof pasuk is the kind of like a period. It's a colon marks the end of the verse. And he talks about the fact that each verse is divided into two divisions. And As far as he's concerned, the top page 202, in the text of the reading selections, we shall employ only saluk and sofasuk. So he's not going to use an afnak. You'll see afnaks in the text. Clause divisions that are likely to cause difficulty will be marked by commas, but it should be noted that the comma does not appear in the original text. They didn't use commas. The words standing at the end of the major verse divisions, and thus especially with afnak and saluk, are said to be in pause because of the break in recitation of the text at these points. So each verse has got two pauses in it, then, in effect. It's got the pause in the middle and then the pause at the end. Such words may have a vocalization slightly different than that of the normal context form. The following changes are the most frequent. So you'll see things like a pathak going to a comets and just drag it out a little bit for a pause. You'll see a segol going to a pathak. Let's see here. Some segolet nouns, you'll see a comet in the first syllable where a segol was. So kaver instead of kever. If a word ends in the sequence schwa, consonant, with a vowel, with a stress, the accent is usually retracted, and thus and this schwa is replaced by the full vowel that corresponds to elsewhere in the paradigm. So these are kind of details of things that you just would take note of when you see them. I'm not sure if I'm going to give you all kinds of detailed testing on this either. I think you should be familiar with the concept of pause and what it is, and the fact that forms will change at the end of sentences and so forth. But the details of them, I'm not sure if we'll... I'll tell you for sure on that tomorrow. Well, the way that you'll see it in the text is that when you see this vowel point change, there'll usually be an afnak or saluk there, because that'll indicate that it's in pause. And then, in other words, if you're not looking at the afnaks and so forth underneath, you'll be able to tell by the fact that that there's an unusual vowel point change. But not all of them will have that. In other words, these changes in vowel points aren't always going to occur. But the afnak and saluk, you'll see those markings in the text.
These are vowel points that you can't explain.
Right. Consider it in pause.
Should you look for
the afnak? Yeah, that's the first thing I would do. If you're looking from the actual text, look down and see if there's an afnak under it or a saluk. And if there is, you probably got the answer to your problem there. Yeah. Okay. And then the peculiarity here, the shawa, the second person masculine singular suffix, eka is regularly replaced by segol. So you get the eka here. And be careful on this one, because your eye may confuse this with a plural. Because the plural's got a yod in there, a segol yod, and this can happen. So malkecha, is your king, singular. If it was a yod in there, then it'd be your king's plural. So you got to be careful on this one. Again, when it's in pause, you're likely to see a full segol here instead of shawa, and don't confuse that with a plural ending. Okay, but the pausal forms of laka and baka are lak and bak, both of which are the same as the corresponding feminine form. So again, watch for that one. If it looks feminine and doesn't line up with anything in the context, it's feminine. Look for the possibility that it's in pause. Other prepositions have a similar change. Because of the printing difficulties, the pausal accents within a verse do not appear in the biblical text accompanying the following lessons. Just cost too much, I think, what he means. The cost of the print and so forth is bad enough for Hebrew font, but to put all the rest of that in. And I'm sure the labor and the time that it would take to set it up. No, you may not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'll probably have a comma or something, though, so watch for commas if there's a pause there. He's usually pretty good about putting the commas in. But if not, just watch out. There may be a... We'll have to watch for it, and if we see him, we'll try to point him out. Okay, so that's about the size of chapter 41. Chapter 42 introduced us to the pu'al, and like I said, be responsible for gudal here in the pu'al, and the paradigm for that. So just the first column in page 206 is what you'll need to be familiar with. And the idea of the pu'al, of course, is just the passive idea of the pi'al. And characterized by doubling of the middle root consonant again. Pattern of vowels is more or less consistent throughout, with kibbutz in the first stem syllable and patak when not reduced in the second. So the ooh-ah sound. And for your, as far as you're concerned, that's the basic pattern, because you're just concerned with recognizing the regular forms. So, not too much more to say there. Doesn't really give any discussion of the meanings. It's going to have just a passive of all the basic categories of meanings you've seen with the PL. So you know what the PL is, just convert it to passive, you have the PUL. That's going to be pretty consistent. Oh, yes. Yeah, there's not going to be... He doesn't even list the forms, so they're apparently not even used that way.
If you look on the other page, 205, they don't show any imperatives for any of them.
Yeah.
There's only one of them, the
imperative
construct.
Right. Yeah, they're just... Imperative is going to be... You seldom are commanding somebody to have something done to them. You know, it can be, you know, no, be sanctified or something, but it's not very common. Not very common.
Magnified.
Yeah, be magnified, yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, when you're commanding something, it's usually commanding somebody to do something that they've got control over. And in cases with these pu'al forms, it's generally going to be something they don't have any control over. So it's going to be just describing something rather than the other. Okay. This section 155, proclusis, retraction, stress, conjunctive, doggish. These are, again, just warnings as to things that may seem strange to you. First, proclusis, as was mentioned in our discussion of pause, certain types of words stand in syntactically conjunctive relationship. Any word in this category may be made proclitic to the one that follows if the accentual pattern of the verse so demands. Proclusis is marked with makef and is more or less the rule for monosyllabic prepositions and particles. And though, you know, like el and al and ad, etc., though instances may be cited where these words are accentually distinct, examples of other types of words in proclusis are. So basically, proclusis involves the word in front losing its stress, makef joining it to the following word. This can be done just for pause purposes and stress purposes within the sentence. So you're likely to see this kind of thing happen sometimes and not at other times, just because of the meter and the rhyme and that type of thing, the stress. So, well, low, that's pretty common. You see low with and without makef. We've already run into things where it's with or without makef, and this is part of the reason for it. Asher Nathan Lee, that's an interesting one because you've got a series of those, all joined by makef, and Lee following it up. Yasif, that he was placing, key being used that way. And here's a full verb form. We shall find favor. Nimsa chen. And it's just because of the way the accent of the passage was, we see these put together. But you wouldn't necessarily see it all the time. Okay. Kene othanu, by us. Again, that could be seen just as easily with no makef. And Yeshvu na, let them dwell now. That's pretty common with na at the end, having makef joining them. The only important vowel changes before makef are the tseri going to segol, cholam wal going to cholam in the final syllable of many words. So, the cholam wal going to kamas katuf. Just plain cholam going to kamas katuf, not cholam wal. So, yeten li, there you've got the tseri going to segol. Would have been yitain, but it now becomes yitin. And shemorna, we've already run into that one. The cholam there is going to become kamas katuf. Okay, retraction of stress is a tendency by no means consistently applied, which is always nice, to avoid two stressed syllables in succession. So don't like to have two things stressed in a row. And this is one place where you'll see a retraction of the stress. So tochal lechem, instead one may find either proclusis, so you might see tochal lechem and see the front just joined to the rear, in which the stress of the first word is surrendered completely, or retraction of the stress, in which the first stress of the first word is moved back to the next full vowel. So not a schwa, but to the next full vowel. So you might see tochal lechem and have the stress move back a syllable. Wayyo sham, and they were there, same kind of thing. the stresses retract. Now, sham would automatically have the accent, it's only one syllable. And so this is something to pay note of. It just be aware of changes in accent and stress that may not be immediately obvious to us because we're not speaking the language and getting the rhythm of it. But because of the rhythm of it, things like that will happen in English. We have a lot of intonation variations in the English language, and a lot of your dialects will have a tendency to place stress in different places and drag things out, and you know, the Texas drawl, you know, they'll talk in such a way that there'll be variations there. So it shouldn't be too surprising that we see some things like that in Hebrew. Conjunctive dagish, when a word ending in an unstressed ah or eh is followed by one beginning with a stressed syllable, the dagish may be placed in the first consonant of the second word. Okay, so a word ending in an unstressed kamatz or kamate, the hay is optional there, it could be kamatz or kamate, or segol hay. If that's followed by a word beginning with a stressed syllable, the dagish may be placed in the first consonant of the second word. And that may be, you know, I don't know what it's really indicating. It's giving some strength to it there, but we've got hayatha lanu, you were there, you were for us. Notice the word hayatha ends in a tau with kamatz. Then the word following begins with a stress, lanu, and it's therefore getting the dagesh. Okay, and this is, again, is a maybe. It's not a positive thing. In other words, this isn't a rule that wherever you see something ending that, you're going to have to do the other. But if you're reading along and you find something that just doesn't seem logical, a lambda with a dagesh in the beginning of a word or something, this is no doubt the reason. The absence of stress on the final ah or eh of the first word may be, one, normal, as in the preceding example. Two, due to retraction. If retraction has taken the stress off the last syllable, generally with comets, hey, that's usually got the stress. And if retraction of one of these other rules has taken it off the last syllable, then you're likely to see this conjunctive dagish. So, ye asa li, the stress has been retracted there, ye asa, and that has caused the conjunctive dagish in the lamet there. Or due to proclises, as in chava lanu, there, it's just kind of the reverse. The stress has been moved, and the first word has kind of lost its stress, and it's shifted over to the last one, and that can also make the hava would normally have taken the stress in the last syllable, but if it's proclitic to the following word, it's going to lose all of its stress, and so that makes that kamate an unstressed syllable now again, and that'll precipitate this kind of thing. So the phonetic value of this dagesh is not certain, you know, how you pronounce it any different. Whether you, if it's a lama, for example, whether you hold a little bit longer or whatever, I don't know. They don't either. Okay. Some of those details, I'll try to give you some indication tomorrow exactly what kind of detail you'd be required on that, if any. Lesson 43. That began our hifil. And you will need to know these five categories of hifil meaning. Causative, which is pretty straightforward. Permissive, that's closely related to causative meaning, and that's only decided by the context, whether something is being permitted or actually directly caused. Stative or intransitive, this is the rarest one. This wasn't, you probably wouldn't logically think of hifil ever involving, but we may find formation of stative verbs from roots that are also stative in the call. So if it's already stative, it may be stative in a little bit different sense with the hithiel, or it may mean exactly the same thing. So we've got karav, to be near, and hikriv, to be near, or to be about to do something, to approach to do something, that kind of thing. So the meaning is pretty much the same. Then you've got your denominative and your unclassified. Okay, we'll stop there, and tomorrow probably won't take us too long to do the rest of this review. I think we'll go ahead and do the review first tomorrow, and then we'll go into those exercises. And I'll give you some more details tomorrow on exactly what to be prepared for in the quiz. Okay, thank you. Grammar is next Tuesday, yeah, a week from today. And there'll be some translation on it, of course, too, from those translation sections. monsoon season is upon us.
Yeah.